The Anton Savage Show
with Kiries.ie
on News Talk.
I'm joined by Aisling O'Rourke, lecturer and communications coach, and Matt Carty, Sinn Féin spokesperson for Foreign Affairs and Defence, to have a look at the stories making the news this morning. And we'll start, Matt, with one that is squarely in your remit, which is continuing coverage of the Defence Forces and criminality within members of the Defence Forces. Reports in both the Irish Times and in the Irish Independent of Defence Force serving members either facing prosecution for particularly gender-based crimes or already having had either internal disciplinary action taken against them or court action taken against them. Are you surprised by the level that seems to be emerging?
Quite frankly, no. There's, I think, been a number of parallel stories that have emerged since Natasha O'Brien has told her story, and I think since people were quite rightly horrified by the fact that, somebody who bet her to a pulp, a serving member of the Defence Forces, walked away with a suspended sentence. And I think the parallel stories are this. On the first hand, I think there is a societal issue around violence against women in particular, but violent assaults in general and how society approaches them. And I think Mary Lou McDonald, as you might have seen, has an op-ed in the Mail today, which is essentially saying we have to move beyond just strong words and an immediate, remarks of horrification when these things happen, and actually get to the point where we take societal action, and that includes legislative action where needed to actually tackle the wider issues around violence against women in particular. Then there's the issues of the Defence Forces, and even within that, so clearly there have been issues within the Defence Forces for some time. The Women of Honour group didn't just emerge out of nowhere. They emerged because there were cultural issues specific to the Defence Forces. And this week, of course, ironically, almost the tribunal arising from their revelations began its work. So there are issues within the Defence Forces that need to be tackled head on. And that requires, again, legislative as well as cultural reforms within the Defence Forces. And then there is also, and I just want to say this, there are also an awful lot, I would say a majority of members of our Defence Forces, men and women, who are more frustrated and angered than anybody because their integrity and their reputation has been damaged by government and Defence Forces leadership's failure to actually deal with these issues.
Can we unpack some of that? Because you talk about the responsibility of the civil authorities and of the military authorities. If we go to the first of those, you said legislative action. Does it require legislative action or does it require judges to hand down custodial sentence?
It does. It does, absolutely. I think one of the reasons, and that's why I mentioned just the anger and frustration of members of the Defence Forces, because this week we had government ministers criticising the military leadership, and people would say rightly, but they were criticising them for not doing what essentially they can't do because the current legislative framework doesn't allow them to do it. So it isn't in any of these spheres. There's issues in the Defence Forces. Everybody accepts that. And there's particular issues in the Defence Forces because of the nature of the Defence Forces and the fact that they are very male dominated. But those issues go way beyond just the Defence Forces and arguably into every facet of public life.
So are you then suggesting, Matt Carty, that you would like to see the Defence Forces have greater power within their courts martial to be able to take actions if the civil courts don't? Is that it?
Well, until yesterday, the military leadership weren't in a position to put somebody on suspension if they were charged with a violent crime until such stage as the actual civil proceedings had concluded. Now, that's very different from the Gardaí, for example, where immediately if such a charge is brought against a member of the Gardaí, they can be put on suspension without prejudice. What even was announced yesterday by the Taoiseach was that local leave, as it's described in the Defence Forces, would be applied. If a member of any workforce has been charged with a crime of that nature, then of course they should be suspended in order to keep everybody they work with safe for the duration of the trial and until the full facts have emerged. So we've had a situation where the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach were criticising the Defence Forces because that hasn't happened, but the framework in which the Defence Forces currently operate doesn't allow that to happen. So that's something that can change very quickly and should change this week in my view.
Aisling O'Rourke, you've been nodding as Matt is speaking.
My concern around all of this, Anton, is that it's being reduced to a gender-based violence issue. And I think what we need to talk about here is that as a country, we have an issue with violence. It's not just gender-based violence. The Gardaí's biggest task on a daily basis is dealing with call-outs for domestic violence. That's the biggest task they face every single day. We have had outrage in this country for as long as I've been alive, if not longer, around women going missing, women being murdered. We've had, yes, it's great to see in the Dáil the members of Parliament standing up and recognising Natasha's efforts this week. That is to be welcomed. But things need to change. We have 9 counties in the country, including my home county of Offaly, with no refuge for domestic violence victims. We know the names of the women who've been murdered, the femicide list that comes out from the Women's Council every single year. We know some of these names by heart, as if we know the women ourselves. And it's time things change. And what we need now is for a conversation from cradle to the grave. We need to educate children about violence. The very first time I was assaulted, I was 6 years old, and my classmate was the person who assaulted me. He was 6. He broke my nose and broke my teeth. It was the first time, but it wasn't the last time. We've been dealing with this for generations, and it's time we need actual action. And the thing around the Defence Forces, which really surprised me, I think, this week, was around the contracts. Like when I was an employee in News Talk, for example, there was a clause in my contract that said, if you conduct unbecoming, reputational damage, I could be let go if I did something. So it's fair to say we need something like that in the Defence Forces. And Matt is right. There are hundreds of people in the Defence Forces who I know from personal relations are furious over all of this. And it's time that their work is recognised as well.
Well, on that note, Matt, is there a requirement within the Defence Forces to hold them not to the standard that you would expect for any other employee, but to a higher standard? Mm-hmm.
And most members of the Defence Forces, just again to be clear, hold themselves to that higher standard. And that's why I think there is such a level of frustration among their number. But there are a number of things, again, that should be changed. A superior officer should not be coming into court and given what is perceived by the public to be a character reference for somebody who has been charged with literally beating a woman to the edge of death.
Well, sorry, just clarify on this, because the current situation requires a commanding officer, as I understand
yes.
it,
To give a professional appraisement of their conduct.
Be that good or bad,
as an officer. But the difficulty is, you know, anybody who read the reference in respect of the Nash O'Brien case would have taken that as that's a character reference. In fact, it was a glowing reference. And you can imagine a victim in that room or anybody who is watching on and how that is taken. So that is something that needs to be clarified in terms of what precisely that means in terms of a professional valuation and how it can be ascribed good, bad or indifferent towards the character. I don't know in violence assault cases what role character references have at all, but certainly I think when you're talking about a superior member of our Defence Forces, a commanding officer, coming into a court and given what it appears to be a glowing professional assessment of an attacker's time in the Defence Forces, it is taken and it clearly impacted on the judge in this case, because the judge cited the perpetrator, Mr. Crotty's role within the Defence Forces as a mitigating factor. It shouldn't be. You know, what he did was, you know, despicable and deserved, in my view, a custodial
sentence. And of course, the two are not intrinsically connected. I mean, one of the worst serial offenders in Canadian history was a laudable and decorated military officer. The fact that you're a good military serving officer or soldier doesn't have anything to do with whether or not you're a criminal outside of it.
For sure. And as I say, I think, you know, I think it was part of the sentiment that some members of the Defence Forces are conveying this week is that they're seen as being scapegoats. But it is true to say that within our Defence Forces, we should accept the highest standard. And as I say, we get that from most of our members, but it also needs to be above reproach. And I think one of the things that the Women of Honour showed was just a lack of transparency and a lack of accountability that within some members of the Defence Forces to these type of actions.
We're speaking with Matt Cardy from Sinn Féin and Aisling O'Rourke, a lecturer and communications coach. Aisling, can we go to the other story that is across all of the papers? Because there, I was going to say there will be an awful lot of people in Dublin Airport this morning worried there won't be a lot of people in Dublin Airport worry because they know there's no flights leaving if you're flying on certain Aer Lingus planes. Aer Lingus strike action happening today, 8-hour stoppage. And what's interesting is, according to all of the coverage, the pilots wanted to go further, but Forsa, the parent union, is being reported to have said, no, hold off until we're back in front of the Labour Court.
And what's very interesting is that today, this morning as we speak, there's pickets at the airport itself. It'll be very interesting to see from other airlines, passengers travelling elsewhere, will they cross a picket? Because traditionally, one doesn't cross a picket. Look, as we speak here, none of us know when this is going to come to an end. And there are thousands of people who have, whether it be a holiday, work or personal reasons, that have been disappointed this week. And I know some Taylor Swift fans had to sell their tickets this weekend because they couldn't get to Dublin for the gigs. It's been very aggravated. It's been very interesting to see both sides and the brutalness, I'd say, of the conversations from both sides. Ordinarily, in an industrial relations dispute, you would have more nuance in what's said to the press from both sides. And there has been a lack of that. I flew with Aer Lingus myself this week. The communications from Aer Lingus as a passenger, I would say, was lacking because, you know, we were all waiting to see whether or not our flight was affected. We got home, thankfully, and, this, you know, a very professional staff and all of that. But this is going to go on for a long run. It's entrenched. This could be the full summer. And there's no end in sight here, you know, and the airline is going to lose thousands. And I found it very interesting as a passenger.
Thousands? I think the airline would have your arm off at the prospect of losing thousands.
But they're going to lose thousands of long-term customers because they're even confusing customers with their own communications on this. So like when I got an email last week telling me my options, but it didn't actually tell me whether or not the flight was or wasn't cancelled. And there was no communication since then. So you were left in limbo. So there'll be an awful lot of people who won't take the risk again. And they'll just, well, do you know what? They didn't handle it very well. We'll go elsewhere. And they'll have that new routine. It's very hard to see an end here.
Well, the Taoiseach has again urged both sides to get into a room and, quotes, not get out until there is a resolution. They're going to be back in front of the Labour Court, my understanding is, on Monday. Now, there isn't anything emerging from any of the either sides to give you a suggestion that something will be different at the Labour Court, but the mere fact that talks are happening is probably a relatively positive thing. Matt, can we move to politics?
Can I just say on that, because I don't think it's appropriate for the Taoiseach to be urging anybody to do anything. And I think he needs to Taoiseach or Taoiseach for that matter, because, you know, Aisling contextualised this in terms of, you know, what usually happens in workers' disputes. This isn't a run-of-the-mill industrial dispute. This is a matter of significant national importance that could have huge implications, not only in terms of those families who I have huge sympathy for, who don't know whether they're going to get on a holiday that perhaps they've been saving for all year, but also in terms, we're an island nation. We depend on air travel.
So what would you have them do?
I would suggest that the Taoiseach should do what Louise O'Reilly has asked them to do, which is bring the parties into a room and actually crack heads together, that there is a level of governmental leadership on this. It isn't good enough for Taoiseachs or Taoiseachs or ministers to act as if they're commentators.
But what power does the government have over either party to this dispute?
Well, there are some mechanisms within the Industrial Relations Act, but above all, they have the power of being the representatives of the Irish people and being able to, and we've seen this previously, we've saw it particularly, I have to say, during the Bertie Ahern era, when you would have issues like this of national significance and national importance and strategic importance, where government take a hand on approach to actually ensure that there's a facilitation.
The fact that
of
government is concerned is not going to, I would have thought, make any difference to International Airlines Group. If I am a pilot and I firmly believe that I'm getting underpaid to the tune of 24%, the fact that Micheál Martin or Simon Harris is getting concerned about this and is voicing the views of the people isn't going to change my mind on that at all.
I'm not asking them to voice the concerns because they've been doing that. Everybody has been saying this is actually a very scary situation. But on a matter of national significance, significance and national importance. You can't have a situation where government have a hands-off approach and just say, well, this is an industrial relations matter and we can't intervene. When the price of not intervening and the price of a resolution not being found in the short term could be profound in terms of the economics,
but in terms of tourism. You just cited earlier on the issue that, for instance, the Defence Forces have because they don't have the legislative footing to be able to do what they might want to do. Surely the same applies in this contract. They can intervene all they want. They don't have any literal power to do anything.
Well, as I say, they do within the Industrial Relations. And if
they do what?
Within the Industrial Relations Act to intervene.
The Industrial Relations Act allows them to do what specifically?
To bring all parties together. And they need to show that at a leadership level, because the alternative, and reminding ourselves as well, that the reason we're in this mess is because Aer Lingus was actually privatised. And it was those who were opposed to privatisation at the time actually said that this could have big implications in the instances where, you know, whatever future owners decided to do. At the moment, we are in a situation where, as you quite rightly say, pilots are appearing very dogged in terms of their demands. Aer Lingus management are appearing to be very dogged in terms of their refusal to negotiate in a manner that will actually lead to a facility. And then somebody has to intervene, because the alternative is that we go through a summer of madness and that this escalates to a point where not only, as I say, people miss their flights and don't get to go on the holidays that they've been planning for some time, but the economic implications and the implications for our tourism sector and other important sectors is going to be very profound, as I say. And I don't think it's good enough for politicians to shrug our shoulders and just say, ah, well.
Well, we're going to come back to that just after 10 o'clock, because we will have a reporter at the airport to get a sense of the kind of reaction from staff and from passengers there, and finding out if any of them thought once or twice before, as Aisling pointed out, they crossed the picket line to go on their holliers. Very briefly, Aisling, a Biden and Trump debate, of course, happened during the week. Extraordinary result that now a lot of the discussion is, will Joe Biden remain on the ticket? Coverage today suggesting that he has managed to salvage something in the last couple of hours, in that he made an appearance yesterday that seems to have been radically different to his debate appearance and may have, to some extent, salved some of the wounds.
But that doubt is still there. Like, it was such a... I only caught clips of it now because it was overnight, but it was such a depressing show of democracy in action, really, in the early hours of Friday morning. There is talk now that Dr. Jill Biden will be key in encouraging the president to withdraw his candidacy. Now, I don't think that's realistic. Like, there's so little time for the Democrats to put forward a new candidate now. Like, I don't think it would really change all that much. But look, they raised the Democrats, I think, overall raised more than Trump, twice as much as Trump. I think it was something around the $14 million on the night from the event. Trump got about $7.8 million. It doesn't bode well.
Aisling O'Rourke, thank you very much. That is Aisling O'Rourke, lecturer and communications coach. And likewise, Matt Carty, thank you very much, particularly for being the only person in your family not going to Taylor Swift on our behalf.
Near enough. I got the good deal, I think, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show with Kiri's.ie on News Talk.